Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing interviews with two extremely talented people, both of whom are appearing this summer at the Banyan Theater. Don Walker, appearing in Art, the first show of the season, and Donna Gerdes, who stars in the third show of the summer season, in which she will be directed by Don Walker. These are interesting people who fell in love with the art of acting very young, had to take a hiatus from it, and are gloriously returning to it, to their and our pleasure. Stay tuned. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources, oh,
it's about being who you really are, all of who you really are, not just some version that you think is the one that's going to go down well with the people who matter in your life, not just some version which you think is who you had to be, ought to be, should have been, better not be anything else, but the real you. And as a psychotherapist, it is clear to me that many of us are not being the real us. Many of us are demonstrating the qualities which we believed are the ones we needed to be, had to be, ought to be, the ones that were not going to bring a consequence that we didn't want and couldn't tolerate. It is my experience that for too many of us, the experience of our childhood led us to believe that some things about us were not okay. And so we did our best to pretend that they were not so, and in many, many cases then simply forgot that we had that quality, that we had that interest, that we had that skill, that we had that passion. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. The technical term for that, the psychotherapeutic term for that, is congruence. What you see is what you get. In this show, I am airing interviews I did with two actors, people who discovered that they were actors very, very young, and whose lives required them to put acting aside for a while, and who now are able to embrace with their hearts and their souls and all of their talent and passion that which they always knew they were. So my first interview is with Don Walker. As I said in the run-up, he is both starring in the first show at the Banyan in art, and he is directing My Old Lady, which will star Donna Gerdes, who is my second interview. These are long interviews. I didn't want to cut them, so now here is Don Walker. So I'm here with Don Walker, who will be appearing in the first production at the Banyan Theater this summer in art, and will be directing the last production, which is My Old Lady. Explaining to Don, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. You would call yourself an actor?
I'm primarily an actor, though I've started directing the past few years. When you age out of the roles, it gives you something else to do. And I've discovered I enjoy it very much. It gives you a chance to oversee the whole theatrical environment instead of just a single character. Especially, I've been fortunate to have some very wonderful cast. And then they get to do all the work. So, you know.
Yeah, right. Okay, good. I only ask one question, and it is, given that you identify yourself primarily as an actor, can you tell me the first moment in your life when telling stories, entertaining, being looked at, any of that attracted you, turned you on?
I was in a play in the third grade, and I just liked being on stage and wearing an outfit. That was fun.
Okay, so that's the first time that it occurred to you that being on stage or playing a role or any of that was
a good thing.
Yeah, so before that, you didn't know about it? It hadn't occurred to you?
No.
It wasn't something you went looking for or were attracted to? You just, it happened, and you said, oh, this is fun. Right? Okay, and clearly you remember it. It was a long time ago. So having said, gee, this is fun, did you do anything else about that?
Well, in high school, I had the opportunity to volunteer to be in some high school plays because at that point, I could see the other plays that were being done and thought, okay, well, that would be fun. Give that a shot. Get cast in a number of shows and worked with the theater and speech teacher and went on trips to the regional theater conferences where you do public speaking and dramatic readings.
And at any point did you think of this as a career?
Yes and no. At some point I'd spent the summer in a short course with the drama school at the University of Oklahoma while I was in high school. So it was 2 or 3 or 4 weeks living in the dorm, going to classes, and being cast in a show. And so I felt very grown up doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
That was very encouraging. When it was all over, I came home and I told my mom, you know, I'm going to go to OU when I graduate from high school. I'm going to go to OU and be a drama major. And she said, no, you're going to OU, but you'll be an art major.
You'll be an art major?
Well, because I was good at art.
So when did you start drawing or painting?
Oh,
or?
From infancy, I guess. You know, I was always drawing things. Always drawing.
So did you think, before you thought about acting, did you think you
were going to... I thought I was going to grow up and work for Walt Disney. That's what I do, because I loved Walt Disney, and I could draw all the Disney characters, and, you know, as well as drawing other things, I just thought, well, that'd be a good career, I could do that. You know? But my mother, bless her heart, figured that probably as an actor I would never make a living, but she knew that commercial art, I could probably make a very good living. So I went to University of Oklahoma, majored in art, but never got to know people in the art school, really.
Because.
But I knew everyone the theater department. Yeah. And I was in one-act plays and full-length plays in the theater department.
So you're majoring in art, but you're spending all of your time in the theater.
My heart was in the theater.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And so finally I switched majors. So it took me an extra year to get my degree. It took me 5 years instead of 4, but I graduated with a major in theater. But of course, what does somebody do with a degree in theater? At that time, there was no professional training as far as how you actually deal with the business of theater. It was just the art of theater. And of course, then people graduate with theater degrees and they do almost anything but theater. Very seldom did anybody in my class that I'm aware of go to work in theater, unless they were in some technical job. So
yeah.
I knew people that had gone and had stage management jobs and lighting jobs.
Right.
So, I went to Yale School of Drama. I also got married at the same time and had a baby and left school after a year to work in the real world. For my working career, I worked as a writer and editor. And the owner of the company decided he wanted to move to Sarasota and offered the chance for everybody who worked for him. And I think he was disappointed that out of 40 or 50 people that worked there at the time, only maybe a dozen people decided to move. And I did. It was a new life and discovered all the theaters down here. The first show I auditioned for was Death on the Nile at the Players in Sarasota. And so that was the first time I'd been on stage since college. It was interesting because at the Players, when I was there, all the other people that were there seemed to know everybody else, of course, as you would imagine.
Right.
And I'd never realized that that expression about being so nervous that your knees would knock, that was real. And I was thankful that I was wearing long pants that day because my knees were shaking while I was on stage. I was that nervous. Well,
who were you? Do you remember who you were?
No, I read a number of roles and got called back to read some more on the next day for callbacks. A wonderful local actor, Carrie Betts, was directing that show, but he didn't cast me. And I thought, well, it's because the play is different than the book. She changed characters and condensed things and so on. I was just doing it cold. So I thought, the next time it comes up, and the next time was very soon, I saw Venice Little Theater was going to do Veronica's Room. Right? So I thought, I'm going to go down, get the script, read the script. That's an interesting script. You know, I've got to do that. And auditioned for that and got the lead and fell in love with my leading lady. It was Jenny Aldridge. And we just stuck together.
So essentially, you finally wound up doing this thing which
I really love.
So now I have seen you all over the place, right? I mean, you're at the Banyan a lot. And now you're at the Oslo, right?
From time to time. I was there most recently in both your houses. I'm hoping that I'll have a crack at the LBJ play All the Way next season. It has a lot of men in it, including Southern legislators. And I've had experience playing Southern legislators. See, I represented Georgia in 1776. And I was a Southern representative in both your houses for an unnamed state, but I was from the South. So, you know, and I think they need a number of bigoted Southern legislators in the play All the Way, and I'm there for it. I'm ready.
You know how,
I'm
right?
I'm ready for it.
Yeah, right. Okay, so you're pretty seriously involved in the Banyan.
The first show was The Drawer Boy. It's a three-person show. Then there was Becky's New Car. Jerry Finn, I'm happy to say, gave me the chance to direct A Lesson from Aloes, the Athel Fugard play, three-person play.
Was that the first time you directed?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, little knee knocking?
But it was, well, because I had a terrific cast, and the story was really, really touching, and we just put together just a terrific production, I think.
Well, so you finally have become a person who makes his life and some of his living from being an actor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now a director.
Let's talk first about art.
Okay.
Tell why people should come and see it, what it's about, all that stuff.
The title of the play has quotation marks. So it's not just art, it's...
Right.
As in... You call that art? That's what the title is.
Uh-huh.
And it's about three close friends, one of whom has bought a very expensive painting that looks as if it's just a big white square for which you paid $200,000 because it's by a really famous artist. And one guy thinks it's a joke, and he gets really upset when he discovers it's not a joke. And then there's a rift in this friendship. And so the art is the MacGuffin, which the story hangs. But the story is really about friendship, I think. And
not about what is art, but about what is friendship.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Oh, fascinating.
Yeah. And it's so well written. The playwright, Esmina Reza, also wrote God of Carnage.
Mm.
So if you've seen that.
I have seen it.
Some kind of...
Yes.
The frenzy that people can get into, even when they're close. So I'm looking forward to it. And my castmates, I'm so delighted to have a chance to work with. Larry Alexander, we most recently saw do Elwood Dowd as Harvey.
Ah.
In the play Harvey. And it's just dynamite, you know. And Larry's going to be in this play. And Gary Marichek, Golden
he
Apple.
Was at he's at FST.
FST.
Doing
and cold feet. Never marry a girl with cold feet.
Yes, right, you know? Right.
And when I saw that he was here, you know, I said, Gary, are you going to be free after? You're going to be, what are you doing this summer? Can you, you know? And I gave him a script to read, and he auditioned, and so he was cast. So I'm delighted. That this is going to be a dynamite group.
Okay, so tell us when it's running.
It opens on June the 25th and runs until July the 12th.
Okay. So now, as long as I have you here, why don't you talk about My Old Lady?
All right. My Old Lady. Do you know what, in France, a viager?
Well, I know because I saw the movie, but I would not have known to tell them if they didn't.
I see. Well, the viager is a method in France where you can sell an apartment, a house, a condo, at a fairly low price with the stipulation that you actually get to live there until you die, and then the buyer takes possession. And that's very often a very good thing for the buyer and seller, because usually people don't start doing that until they're quite elderly. But as occasionally happens, the seller lives a really long time, and in one famous case, the seller lived way much longer than the buyer. But this story, and it's a three-person play, a man comes from New York to take over what his father left him in his will as the only thing that was left to him in his will. And he thinks he's going to take over this apartment, have a quick sale, and leave, get some money and leave. Discovered that he can't sell it quickly because it's a viager and there's an old lady living there. An old lady and her daughter. So it's really, the story is how these people meet and interact and what they learn and what changes them during the course of this period while they're together. And it has some very interesting and touching moments too.
Yeah, it does. And if it's anything like the movie, I loved the movie.
Well, Israel Horowitz had written the play. He also did the screenplay and directed the movie. And in preparing the screenplay, he learned a few things about how the stage play should be changed and actually altered some of the bits of the stage play based on what he'd learned. So what we're working with is now his revision of the script, you know, that he's provided for us.
Okay, so I ask one more question. How long ago did you come out here?
In 91.
That's like almost 25, right?
Yeah.
And I'm assuming, maybe this isn't true, that being an actor, being in theater, has been the most significant work in your life in this 25 years, or that's not true?
Well, I'd say it probably is. I have loved what I usually refer to as the day job.
Yeah, right.
Because it gave me the opportunity to make a good living down here, and the boss, the owner of the company, enjoyed what I did. He and his wife always came to see the plays, and so I had the ability to take time off for rehearsals when I needed, and it has been a great job, but what feeds the heart and soul most is the theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm also on the board of directors for Theater Odyssey, the 10-minute play festival, and I've directed a show this year, and I enjoyed that, so I think I'll probably keep trying to do that as time goes on.
So, would you talk about what it's like for you to give your heart and soul to acting, to the theater?
Well, see, when you say it that way, it sounds really serious and
does it not feel
meaningful?
Like that?
No, it just seems like I'm gonna go have a good time.
You're just playing.
Yeah, it's playing. Some things are harder to figure out while you're doing them.
But it doesn't matter. Nothing is riding on this, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
That,
you know, it's not like your career depends on it because, hey, I don't really have a career in the theater. I'm having fun. I'm going off to play with my friends.
Yes, right.
and make new friends and do it some more. It's meaningful in the sense that we always say, isn't this an odd thing for grown-ups to do, to dress up and pretend to be other people? And what is that? It's the impulse for storytelling. Mm-hmm. You know, we're contributing to storytelling in some way. We like to tell stories. But and why do human beings need to tell stories and need to hear stories? That I don't know. That's buried somehow deeper in the human
psyche.
But we do. And so that's kind of fun to do.
Yes.
So I don't know why I like it, but I like it.
What you say is that you like the fact of telling stories. You like the act of telling stories. So do you like the being someone else? Do you like the sense of finding something inside of you that you don't usually use in your regular life, but that is a part of you that gets expressed on stage? Or that's not ever true?
I like it when it works.
And what does that mean,
well,
when it works?
Jenny and I recently saw a production of Betrayal. It's a multi-scene play that sort of runs backwards. Starting in the present, and each scene you see is going back a little further in the past. So it's an odd presentation, mm-hmm. but it sort of gives a little
irony. It shows you what happened, right? And then it shows you why.
Preceding moment,
right.
Yeah. One of those scenes, Jenny and I did for an acting class, and it's a hard scene between a husband and wife where she finally admits that she and his best friend have been having an affair for years. And so there's some, but not much is actually said in the lines. So it really, it's a strange little scene to play, and playing it brought out things that normally weren't brought out between the two of us that had to be there for the scene to have to make it work. And it did, and it kind of took everybody aback a little bit.
Everybody, meaning you.
The people, the students in the class, and the two of us, each other. But it didn't feel like, and it has never felt like, putting on a mask totally and becoming somebody else. It's me, mm-hmm. you know. It's me. This is just the facet of me that I'm showing you now. And for this character, there's another facet of me, but it's...
Yeah. No, I think that's right.
It's always me.
No, I think that's right. David Howard said that one of the things about acting that was so startling to him was that he discovered things about himself because he had to play them and that he didn't know he had, but because he played it, he found it inside himself, and it was somewhat startling to him. Are you saying something like that or not?
Yeah, I think that is true.
And that's a exciting thing? That's a challenging thing? That's a disturbing
thing? Well, it is a challenge.
Thing.
It's a challenge in that the hard part of playing a role, I think, is to make it real and not to pretend.
Yes, not to act.
Right. So that to do it repeatedly every time you do it and to have to find whatever that place is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That you find that emotional response to whatever it is that, you know, you're dealing with. And to keep it always fresh so that the moment that used to really hurt, when it stops hurting, you have to go back and you think to yourself, now how can I do that? What do I need to do to find that again? Why do we do that to ourselves? I don't know.
Well, that's an interesting question. There's a Laurence Olivier story where apparently he came off stage and had done some kind of amazing, brilliant performance, and everybody backstage was applauding and carrying on and screaming and yelling, and he was grumbling and mad, and they said, what's the matter with you? You were amazing. He said, I know, but I don't know how to do that again. I mean, it's good to know that he couldn't either, but I think that's right, that it's hard work. Imagine certain characters are closer to you, easier to be than others.
I think that's very true. In Becky's New Car, I played Becky's husband. Becky has an affair. I mean, she's married to a wonderful guy, but her life is kind of ho-hum.
Yeah,
and
right.
She gets swept up in this other world and doesn't mean to do it. And I'm her husband, who's a really nice guy, except that the final moments when she's confronting me and not as nice as she'd like me to be, but, you know, I'm human, mm-hmm. after all. It's a little hard moment, but it had to be a hard moment between us for the show to work.
Right.
You know?
Hard meaning that you didn't say, well, he's really, it's okay, honey. Don't worry about
yeah.
it, right?
Yeah, and that certainly the lines are in the script, so you know what needs to happen. But the important stuff that happens on stage happens sort of under the lines or between the lines. The audience should be able to see it happening even if you were not speaking or you were speaking in sign language or Greek or something. They should understand exactly what that moment is between them. And that's what makes it real.
Yes, and if that isn't what you would do, then you have to find that. Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I do think that everybody is capable of everything. So it would be in you the capacity to do that you might not normally do. I'm not making that much sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, good. So it's interesting. I mean, the last training you had was college, right?
Yeah.
So this is all just what you what you learned and who you are? I mean, that you're just an actor.
Well, we see a lot of plays and we mm-hmm. see a lot of real life. And the story that's you're acting on stage is any good, and I've been fortunate to be in plays that are pretty
mm-hmm.
good.
Yeah.
Then the characters are well written, and it's there for you to mine and find out about. I was in a production of 12 Angry Men at the Oslo.
This last one, Frank Galati,
yeah.
It was wonderful.
One day on a talkback, we were all out on stage and people were asking us questions about it and so on. And Judd Williford, who played the holdout juror,
mm-hmm.
Somebody had asked him a question and he said, well, he'd come into the rehearsal process. He thought sort of, he felt a little behind the eight ball because a number of the cast members had been at a production over in Jupiter at the Maltz Theater over there. And so they were here now with some new people like him and me and a few other guys. But he had this big role and he was just felt a little behind and trying to figure out motivations and why to do things. And on one particular day, we could tell that he was having some trouble, but we didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And apparently there was some moment when something didn't happen that didn't make any sense to him. And at break, we took a break. And when he came off the break, he sat down next to Frank and just felt so frustrated. And he said, all Frank said to him was, isn't it interesting how sometimes we decide not to speak? And Judd said when he heard that, suddenly everything made sense about that little moment, about what he was doing. That, you know, that it was a decision not to respond to the person, you know,
mm-hmm.
to let it go and so. And that was one of the things about Frank Galati's direction that's always been true, that Frank somehow nudges you into the way, the path you need to be on. It's like as he would point out, it's like a jazz combo, and every now and then, you know, it's your turn for this little riff, and this somebody else's turn, and back and forth, and back and forth. But the way he nudges you into doing this, ultimately, you feel like, you did the whole thing, you know,
yes, right.
And that he never had a part of it. But in fact, he's been the primary nudger all the way along. He's really remarkable. I want to be Frank when I grow up.
Everybody. Okay, so have you ever thought of writing?
I started writing in the fourth grade when a friend started writing stories that were like science fiction stories. It would be a page and a half of notebook paper. And every week he would read this little chapter to the class. And it was like a little cliffhanger, like a movie serial that you see every week. And it was a little science fiction thing. And I liked that. So I started writing some things too. And so I wrote stories. And when I was in high school, I had submitted short stories to all kinds of inappropriate magazines and collected a pile of rejection slips. But because of the writing that I had done is probably why I got my first job with the electric company in New Haven in their PR department to write stories
right.
for the employee magazine and
mm-hmm.
the newsletters and all that kind of stuff. So I used to write a great deal, and I haven't written very much anymore. Most of my work in my day job has been as an editor cleaning up. other things. I recently joined a group, the Sarasota Area Playwrights Group.
SAPS.
With the acronym SAPS.
Mm-hmm.
Though I'm there more as an actor member, mm-hmm. and to help them read their things than as a writer. I haven't written anything for them yet. I've had a few ideas, but I haven't had time to pursue it, and I'll probably just continue to be a reader for them into the near future. We'll see.
I don't know. It looks like you might want to.
I might.
I think you're blushing, actually.
We'll see.
So, you know, it's so interesting. I mean, as a child, you were a writer, you were an artist, and you were an actor.
In a sense.
Mm-hmm.
In a very childish sense. But, yeah, all those things had always interested me.
And now you can pretty much do all of them if you want.
It's a great life.
It's a great life. Yeah. It's a great place to stop. Thank you very much, Don Walker.
My pleasure.
It's a great life. Yes. When you are living the life you were meant to live, how can it be other than a great life? And it is my hope that while you've been listening to Don and listening to the way in which he followed all of his instincts to write, to draw, to act, and then his instincts to care for his family, he, at every turn, he asked himself whether he was conscious of it or not, whether it was intentional or not. He was completely and deeply connected to what he needed to be for himself, who he really was. So at every turn, he asked himself, what is correct here? What must I do here? What feels right for me here? And having done that, has found himself in a place where he can be all that he is. So I wonder if, while you've been listening to Don, if you've been saying to yourself, is this how I feel about my life? Can I say about my life that it is a great life? Can I say that I am being who I am in every possible way? Well, if that's not true, if you think that there are ways in which you could be yourself that you are not being, then I hope that listening to Don and listening to this show and listening to Donna, who's coming up next, will help you to focus on that and wonder if maybe you could be all that you are. So without further ado, I'm going to play another person who has always followed her very best sense of herself. This is Donna Gerdes. So I'm here with Donna Gerdes, and I'm explaining to Donna that I interview people who make their living or their life within art. And it's clear to me that you make a great deal of your life with the art of acting. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. Not as much as I would like. There's not always that many opportunities down here, but that's true. It's my whole life. That's what I love to do.
Wow. Okay, good. Well, then you're perfect for me.
Good.
I'm interviewing Donna at this moment because she's about to appear in My Old Lady.
Correct.
The last play of the season at the Banyan.
Correct.
Right. Okay, good. So I only ask one question, and that is, do you remember the very first moment in your life when acting, play acting, telling stories, being looked at, any of that appealed to you?
Oh, I sure do.
Oh, yeah.
I came from a little town in South Dakota, Eureka, South Dakota, a little German community. That's my background. And I had a cousin, Bruce. And ever since I can remember, I would say from the age of 6 or 5 or whatever, we wrote plays. And we performed them in the garages, and we invited people, and we always played the leads. And how that ever started, I'll never know, because it's not in my background, any family background. And I just loved it, and that's how it all started.
Well, I was going to ask the question that you answered, which is, had you seen a play? Had he seen a play?
No. Well, I did. I did see at Eureka High School. they put on plays, and it was always a mystery play, and it was scary, you know, there was always a hand coming out of the wall. And I thought, oh my God, if I could just be up there and do that. And
okay,
that
so now, you were little then, I mean, you were not in high school.
No, I was little, yeah, and this was before television.
Oh my
I just remember sitting around. Remember when people used to sit around the radio? You sat around and you looked at the radio. And,
that's so did you listen to the radio plays?
Oh, yes. All the radio stories and plays and things, yes. Anything. And I had used to dress up. My mother had one room upstairs in our house, and she said, just do what you want. All of her old dresses. And my sisters and I, we would dress up, and it was just glorious. I just loved it.
Well, clearly, this is the beginning for an actor. But was your cousin Bruce older or younger?
He was a year younger than I.
A year younger than you.
Yep.
So you said to him, "Okay, we're going to write a play now."
Yes,
right.
He was always in theater and always loved it. And we were the only ones in our family. I came from a large family. There were six children.
Okay. So we have these two very young children who are clearly already captured by the whole idea of telling stories, being looked at, performing, right? And your mother indulges this at least to the extent where she says, dress up however much you want, and they let you do the plays, and they come, I guess,
they
right?
They sure did.
Right.
They did.
Right, okay.
Yes.
So now you go to school. Mm-hmm. Do you audition for plays in school?
No, I didn't, because when I was in grade school, there wasn't an opportunity. We didn't have it then. And then we moved to a larger city, Aberdeen, and that's where I went to a junior high at that time in high school. And then I had to work after school.
Oh.
So, and that's when they rehearsed the plays and things. So I could never participate in the plays. And that always kind of broke my heart. But I sang. And so I used to do a lot of solo work with the choir and things, and I also played an instrument in the band. I played the French horn. So I said that was kind of a release for it. And then I went on to college.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
So this is an opportunity to perform. So what you're doing is you're getting your performing needs
getting
somewhat
somewhat
met.
Yes.
But I imagine it was really painful for you not to be able to do this one thing that, right.
I wanted so, but that was just, I had to work.
No, it wasn't in the cards. Okay, so then you went to college.
Mm-hmm.
Did you major in theater?
No.
Of course not.
I was pre-med.
Oh, my God.
I had to go to medical school. Yes, I had an aunt who was in medicine, and I was always very keen on chemistry and biology and things like that. And then just before I graduated from college, I, by a fluke, got a scholarship to an opera workshop in Chatham College, which is in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
What is the fluke? How did this happen?
Well, I always sang, and I had a very good voice instructor in college, and he trained me in opera and things.
So even though you're pre-med, you're studying voice.
Yes. I had a composite major in biology and chemistry and a minor in drama.
So were you in any plays in college?
Not too terribly much. I did a couple of things, but it just, most of my work, because I was just I don't remember exactly why, but most of my work, I used to help build sets, and that was the training, because the instructor said it's just as important for drama people to know how to build sets and all that. But then I did get the lead in Brigadoon in college, which was wonderful, and that just, I just flipped out. That was just one of the most magical times of my life. I thought, oh God, this is what I've been working for.
Okay, so here we have this woman this young woman, right, who clearly knows where her heart is, but she's majoring in biology and chemistry, and she's dabbling in theater.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Right.
Yeah. And imagining that you're going to apply to medical school?
Yes.
Okay, so how did you get this opera thing?
Well, I We went to Minneapolis, which is, you know, the big city, mm-hmm. you know, for Aberdeen, and, you know, we competed and things.
Oh, so you tried.
Yeah, so I...
You were competing for it.
So I sang a song, I can't remember what it was, and I got the prize, and the prize was this opera workshop, and I was there for a month, and that was really... frightening, and brought Robert Lawrence, who then was the radio voice for, I don't know if you remember, but the Met Opera on radio used to do a Saturday, they used to do Saturday afternoon matinees, performances of operas, and mm-hmm. they would have a moderator, and Robert Lawrence was the moderator. Well, he was there, and of course, I studied voice, but I didn't know full opera. I never had it. I knew a couple of arias and things, and most of the young people there were at this workshop were from the East Coast, and they knew full operas and stuff. And I thought, oh, I'm way out of my league here. But I persevered. And while I was there, I met a young lady who lived in Little Rock, Arkansas. And she said, Donna, come to New York with me. She said, my voice teacher knows the director of this Gilbert and Sullivan Repertory Company off Broadway, and she says she can get me a job, and I know you can get it too. So I thought, why not?
My God.
It's what I said, this is what I've been waiting for. And that's what we did. I went home. By that time, my parents had moved to Montana. I went home, and I said goodbye, and I packed up my things, took a train, and we met at Penn Station the day after Labor Day in 1959. I was terrified.
I'm sure.
I thought, what am I doing here? But within about a week, I had a job. And we started as apprentices with this Gilbert and Sullivan Company, and it just took off from there.
Well, okay, you got a straight job, you mean?
Yes,
right?
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So what does it mean it took off from there? Did you work at the, I mean, did you do Gilbert and Sullivan?
Yes, yes.
With this company?
Yes, we had, it was at the Jan Hus House, which is on East 74th Street. It was an old, was it Hungarian? Church, and they converted it into a theater, and we performed, and we did these Gilbert and Sullivan, and we would rehearse like two or three plays at a time, and we had some equity performers. Of course, I was just an apprentice then, mm-hmm. and was in the chorus and things, but it was wonderful training. You know, Gilbert and Sullivan, very highly disciplined, you know, and orderly and things, and I worked with them for about two to three years, I think it was.
So. And then what?
And then I auditioned for a role in Student Prince at a little playhouse in Boiling Springs, Pennsylvania. It was Allen Berry Playhouse, and I got the lead in it.
Wait a minute. Yes. So far, have you had any acting training?
No.
Right.
No, I didn't. That was the one thing, and I think I tried one or two lessons, but I was... Quite frankly, I was so busy working.
You were working, right,
yeah.
Right.
So I never got around to that. I wish I had.
Well, it doesn't look like you needed it.
You know.
So, and that's part of the, what's intriguing about your story that it sounds like it just occurred for you.
Yeah.
You know,
did.
I mean.
Did. I had people often said you just have a natural facility for it, you know. They said, you're not a great actress. And, of course, all I did was musical comedies because I had a good voice.
Well, okay, let's back up. So the Student Prince, I guess you got it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And so then what?
And then I just went on and I started to audition for other things and did a lot of the musicals and things for the regional theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Long Wharf Theater in New Haven and Goodman Theater in Chicago, Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, Center Stage in Baltimore, Washington Theater Club in D.C. And I just worked steadily.
So at some point, fortunate. I don't think it has anything to do with fortune, but never mind. Did you get equity at some point?
Oh yes. I was equity. Let's see. I think I joined Actors Equity in about 61. This Gilbert and Sullivan company that I was with off Broadway went on tour, and in order to go on tour and play the houses, we had to go. We had to become equity. So yes. And when I did the student prints,
you
and
already
I was
were
already
right.
Equity. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I mean, you're in New York for under a year and whatever,
yeah,
and
yes,
already you're an equity actor,
yes,
and you're working.
That's right.
Well, amazing.
Yeah.
And so then your career progresses. You just keep auditioning and you keep working.
I keep working. I sure do. Yeah.
So how did you wind up here?
Well, I was doing a show in Chicago at the Goodman Theater, and it was held over. And the day that I was to go back to New York, the closing night, the director of a theater up in North, it was called, it was up at Barat College, north of Chicago, and they were doing a production of What the Butler Saw, and the director came to see my show because their leading lady quit.
Ooh.
And he had heard about me. I got very good reviews in the show. And he heard about me, so he came to see it. And he met me afterwards backstage and said, I want you to come and do this show. So I said, okay, I guess I'm not going back to New York. So I went up there and did it. And while I was there, I met Danny Sewell, my soon-to-be husband. And he was there with his four children. Mm-hmm. And they were doing, he was doing Borstal Boy. And then we did What the Butler Saw together and stuff. And within about 30 days, we decided that this was it. So
wow.
I inherited a husband and four stepchildren. And
oh, my goodness.
I know. And then he had to go on to San Francisco. He was doing a radio show out there. And I went back to New York. And then I was going to go to Actors Theater in Louisville to do about three or four shows there. And he and the children joined me down there, and then we went back to New York. I had this little apartment in New York, and we said, we'll have to get a bigger place, which we never did. The apartment, which I had taken in 69 with my sisters, we still have, and one of my sons lives there with his wife and two children.
Wow!
So that was that. So I continued working for a while, Lynn, up until, about maybe 74, 75. And then when you're in theater, you're a gypsy, you know, you got to travel. And when you have four children, you can't because I couldn't leave. I didn't want to leave them at home.
Right.
And you can't.
How old were they?
Well, when we met, my youngest was 9 and my stepdaughter was 16. I had their three boys and then the other two were in between.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually I decided that because I remember when I told my mother about this, she said, well, Donna, she said, remember, she said, the children come first.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yep, you're right, Mom. And so I left the theater and joined and worked for W.R. Grace and Company, which at that time had, you know, used to be all the shipping lines,
mm-hmm.
and things, and then they left that and they went into other things. And then I worked for them for about 10 years, and during that time I went back to school and got my master's in financial administration. So, and to make a long story short, that's how I got down to Sarasota. I worked there for about 10 years, and then I really was tired of it, you know, just doing, I mean, I love working with numbers, that's not a problem, but I just thought, I can't, and so my husband was English, and we went over there to live for a little while, and then when I came back, I said, I'm going to see about combining my business background now with my acting background. So I sent out my resume to all the regional theaters, including the Oslo, and I got a call from the Oslo. And in November, right after Thanksgiving, I joined the Oslo as their business manager. They hired me.
My goodness.
Yeah.
And what year was that?
That
was
87. 87.
Amazing.
Yeah. And that was when we were still in the little,
historic.
Yeah, which was down by the bay.
Yeah.
And our offices were on the third floor of the museum. because we didn't, and then, but they were already raising their funds for the building,
yeah.
You know, which is now the FSU Center. And so that's, so I...
So now you're in Sarasota.
Yes.
So did you say to yourself, well, there's a lot of theater here, let me see about working here?
Yeah. Well, I didn't, because my husband really didn't, you know, he didn't want me to go back into theater, you know, because he knew it wasn't, it's just not that secure and things. And I, just being down here and in theater, and I enjoyed doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I met a lot of wonderful people and things, but I, in the back of my mind, I always wanted to go into theater. And then I became their development director in 1994-95. That was when Howard Millman came,
mm-hmm.
and because I was had been appointed acting executive director of the center at that time, and then I became their development director, and then worked for them until. And then during that time, Howard. Let's see, I retired from there in 2003, and then I went back to New York for about 6 months, and I thought, well, I'll get back, but I had lost all my contacts,
yeah, and it's all, yeah.
and it was just, it was totally different, and I just couldn't do it, and I had hoped to rent my house, but I was not able to do that, so, and my husband had passed away in 2001, and so I...
And the kids were all grown.
And the kids were all grown, so I said, well, I'm just, so I came back down here, and then I got a job. Howard Millman hired me in a production at the Oslo. It was Front Page.
Uh-huh.
I did that, and that was wonderful. So, and then since then, because I'm equity, it's really hard.
Yes,
to get,
yes,
you know,
yes,
there's not
yes.
many. So I have done a few stints, like at the Backstage Theater at the Players.
Mm-hmm.
I did a few things there. I do things low profile because, as an equity actor,
yes,
you're
you
not
right.
supposed
right,
to
right,
do it.
Right.
But my point is that if you don't work, you don't grow.
Yeah. Right.
And particularly since I hadn't had any acting, I had no more desire to sing. I just sort of lost my, you know, I just, and, you know, my age and stuff and musicals just don't quite click. but I really, really got into the acting and really enjoyed doing it. And
okay, so yeah. Now you're about to be my old lady.
Yes.
You want to talk about the play a little bit?
Yes, I'd love to. It's a wonderful play. It's by Israel Horowitz. And it was just recently made into a movie.
Yes, I saw
you know,
the movie.
With Maggie Smith and Kevin Klein.
Did you see the movie?
Yes, I saw. Well, I saw it on. I've got a DVD on
uh-huh,
it and
right.
things. Yeah, and yeah, it's a wonderful play. It's a three character play.
Mm-hmm.
I play the character is Madame Girard, and she's 92. She says she's only 90, but she's 92. And this young man comes and. He, under the assumption that he has inherited this apartment in Paris,
mm-hmm.
this
mm-hmm.
beautiful apartment, and only to find out that it's a viager, which means that his father bought it very cheaply, but he, in the meantime, he had to agree to pay the charges or the fees for the apartment until the owner dies. Well, this lady says, you can't move in until I die. And there was a similar, and in the play, it talks about, there was this woman in, it was at Arles, she lived to be 120 or something, and this was a true story, and she actually outlived the owner who had bought it, she outlived her doctor, she outlived everybody, but no one could move her out of the apartment,
no.
because that was the agreement.
Right.
She got the, and that's, and then, the young man meets her daughter. She has a daughter, and it's a there's some strange twists and but
yeah, it's a
nice.
Lovely story.
Yeah,
it's lovely. It was quite surprising to me the
yes.
movie.
Yeah.
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 Okay, so tell me when it airs. I mean, when it runs.
Well, it runs August 6th through August 23rd.
Oh, 23rd, is that what you said?
Mm-hmm. 23rd.
August 6th.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And Don Walker is directing it.
Yes.
Yes.
I. interviewed Don.
Yes, and Don is going to be doing art. He's going to be an actor in the first play of the season.
Has he directed you before?
No. I've worked with him. I've done some play readings with Don. I've never done an actual performance with him. But and this will be in the second production that I've done for the Banyan. I did The Piano Teacher a few years ago, and that was another lovely play. That was fun.
Well, this is lovely, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Well, me too. Thank you.
This is great. Thank you very much, Donna.
You're welcome, Lynn.
So again, you can hear the certainty, the early discovery of what is significant, important, comfortable, correct for Donna. And despite a provincial upbringing, she follows her heart. She is determined. She packs her bags and she takes that amazingly risky leap. And then she sees another road that has her name on it. And she jumps on it. And now we have her back on her original road. Again, I hope that these stories are inspirational for you. And if you want to talk about that or ask questions about that, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. Just click on the email link and ask me anything or make any comments. I'll be glad to hear from you. And as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. Going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten